Dave Lundy and Chris Veronis, Second City director, writer, and actor Ron West, and live Christmas music in Studio 435 with the Bangers. And now here's your host, a man who still feels like it's too early for Christmas, Justin Kaufman.
That's so true, man. I just feel like it's too early. I mean, I'll go with the decorations, all that kind of stuff. It looks nice outside, but Christmas trees and presents and everything about Christmas, I don't know, man. Too early. It's only the 12th. That might be me, because I live in a household. My wife is super Christmas. And I kid you not, she already has all of the Christmas presents wrapped under the tree. She has our son in the mood. Every morning he wakes up and he says, "Dad, I don't see any of your presents under the tree." Like, I'm already getting guilt. I feel guilted about Christmas, about not being active on Christmas. And I am. I'm good at it. I just wait closer. Like, I feel like, I don't know why. I have it in my head since I was a kid that, like, December 19th. I don't know why that date sticks. But that's the date that you start, you know, getting the old newspapers out and wrapping presents and putting it underneath. And that was my style. Growing up, it was, I followed my parents were a big newspaper wrapping family. My dad, even worse, he'd be like the paper bag from Jewel, you know, that he put a basketball in. And he forgot that he got the basketball. So, like, on Christmas Day, we'd be done opening presents, and my dad would come back in and be like, "Hey, I got you something." "Oh, hey, did you forget this one in the garage, Pops?" So I kind of like that. There's something endearing about that. But my wife is not, she did not come up that way. They came up in a very strict kind of Christmas is it.
Who are the presents for?
They're for me. They're for my son. They're for our parents. Like, mm-hmm. You know, for every, you know, before we actually hand them out.
Right.
They're under our tree.
Because, yeah, when you're a kid, we had two trees. We had a fake tree for relatives and what have you, and then a real tree for us. And
two trees.
Yeah. And that's the goal. That's the dream. That's the zippy dream here, is to eventually have a house big enough for two trees. But anyway, so the upstairs fake tree would have, you know, cousins' presents, relatives' presents. The downstairs tree was just for Santa Claus. He brought those on Christmas Eve.
Oh, so it was an empty tree.
Yeah, it was an empty tree. But now, as we're adults,
Santa doesn't visit.
We put, because we've been bad. Yeah. So we do put Christmas presents. I haven't gotten there yet, but we do have them underneath the tree.
But I guess the call, and you know, maybe this is the through line throughout the show, because we'll get on with it. We got a great show tonight, awesome show. But I feel like maybe, you know, text in or let me know. I mean, am I late to the game? I mean, on December 12th, I feel like it's a little bit over the line to have everything wrapped and under the tree right now. I feel like 2 weeks out, especially with a Christmas on Saturday or Sunday, whenever it is next. Like, I feel like I'm being pressured into, like there's a feel in the air at home that I'm like letting down Christmas because it's the 12th and I haven't actually put, and then I'll put the presents under there, and I'll tell you right now, I'm not a good rapper.
Yeah.
I'm great at like hip hop rap. I can freestyle like crazy, but as a gift rapper, I'm terrible at it.
Yeah, especially if you get something like that's a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
not
if it's
like
if it's not a perfect square. Mm-hmm. But that's what gets also. I'm like, well, then when I put those under there, it's like I get a little bit of guilted for that. That's what you did. What is that? How much tape did you use? I'm like, leave me alone.
I know. I hear like if you use more than four pieces of tape, you're doing it wrong. I'm like, what? I'm on one side.
I tape until it's done. I don't care. You know what? I've worked really hard in my career. And I've worked hard at every job I've done to be in a position where I can use as much tape as I want to use. Right? If I want to waste Scotch tape, you know what? I think I deserve that after all the years. All right. Coming up tonight, we got a great show. We're going to take a break here. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll give you the lineup a little bit later. We got an awesome 4 hours here. I'm so excited. Live Christmas music. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download. Let's kick this show off with the carry out. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news to you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump doesn't believe the Russians were trying to meddle in American government. It's like he's never seen Red Dawn. The CIA and other intelligence gatherers have briefed D.C. and Trump doesn't believe what they are saying. There's a lot of evidence suggesting the Russians did hack the DNC, but the political motivations, getting Trump elected, are still somewhat cloudy. Although I will go on record as saying that I think that the WikiLeaks dump of John Podesta's emails during the election did hurt and eventually keep Hillary Clinton from winning the White House. Maybe there was no smoking gun, but the point was to deem her untrustworthy, and it worked. If that was being done by a freedom fighter hacker who wanted to expose the corrupt system, all right. But it seems like that wasn't the case. Instead, we had a foreign power, or on and off again lover, not liking one candidate and setting out to get a favorable one elected. And if this is truly the case, I could see why the president-elect doesn't want to admit it, because then his political win is less legitimate than it already is. Anyway, you know what? Who cares? I like vodka, and Gorky Park was an okay metal band, so you know what? I'm cool with our new overlords. Just do me a favor. Don't take away Christmas and replace it with, like, some St. Petersburg crap. That's where we draw the line. Trump also took to Twitter to question the cost of a new F-35 warplane. Lockheed Martin built it. Trump's proving that he is indeed fair and balanced. He ripped Boeing for Air Force One costs earlier, now goes after Lockheed Martin. Does this mean Trump is going to look to cost-cutting and savings from the military-industrial complex? Taking on Top Gun, I like. Although, this is sort of like the first or second episode of a season of 24. It only goes downhill from here, Trump. Sorry. The recount effort was wrapped up in Wisconsin, and Trump won. He even expanded the margin of victory. So get back in the woods, Hillary Clinton. More shame for you. Former Congressman Aaron Schock has pleaded not guilty to 24 counts of being too stylish and good-looking to be congressman. I hope he realizes that he's just too hot for government, right? When this all blows over and he has to pay a fine or maybe a couple years in jail, just get out of government. Get into pharmaceuticals. I mean, seriously, I could see you walking in with a cool suit on, giving guacamole to every doctor's office at lunchtime. Hey, it's Aaron Schock, the pharmaceutical man, right? Just rolls off the tongue. A new study by DePaul University suggests that bikers in Chicago should be allowed to roll through stop signs like yield signs and be able to run red lights. When hearing this news, the Downloads bike advocate was like, don't tell us what to do. We'll ride wherever we want to ride. Nanny state. On your left. I said on your left. Jeez. Downloads bike advocate. So angry, Pete. Jeez. Yikes. Chipotle is shaking up its leadership team. The burrito chain has seen better days after a few E. coli scares have weakened the chain restaurant. Stepping down is the new co-CEO. No word, though, on whether or not he'll have to wash his hands on the way out. Apple released a new emoji today with a nose. Yep, emojis are no longer just eyes and a mouth. The nose will take us one step closer to never having to spell again. Hershey is closing down its Michigan Avenue chocolate store, leaving Michigan Avenue dangerously low on stupid candy stores. Ah, now where will I go to get out of the cold when walking around on a mag mile? Don't make me go to Ghirardelli's. No. All right, I'll get one cranberry chocolate piece for 35 cents. Oh. Something tells me another candy store is just going to take over there. In weather, well, here we are. After the second consecutive weekend of snow, here comes the hammer. Wednesday, high of 16. Thursday, a high of 6. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Try 6 degrees of freezing your bacon off. Let me write that down. I'm going to write that. Freeze in your bacon. I got to send that to Leno. In sports, the Bears lose to the Lions 2017 after Josh Bellamy dropped yet another late-game ball that would have put the Bears in a position to tie or win. What? This dude! Twitter trolls called for his head yesterday, mostly because, well, he's a professional football player and he gets paid to catch balls, I guess. That's why. I mean, there's got to be better receivers out there. I mean, paging David Terrell, right? I haven't seen a bigger head case since that dude. And the only reason this guy's on the field is because Alshon Jeffrey was suspended. That's right. PEDs. He let the team down. This is what happens when you get suspended. Ah. Now, just imagine if Matt Barkley had both Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White and Zach Miller. Heck, even Jim Miller at this point. Seriously, Matt Barkley and Jordan Howard have played well enough to win all the games that Barkley started. The team around him? Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Where's that emoji with the nose?
Hold it. The bright spot was the Bears' defense, sans giving up a winning drive in the fourth quarter. The defensive line came up big, again harassing Matt Stafford all game, and they even got a couple of interceptions. What, they still do those? That's a thing in the NFL? I thought there was a law that you couldn't do it, or a new rule or something, because the Bears just haven't intercepted a ball in like 8 months. Well, cool. Now, the Bears just hope to lose out so they can secure a top three pick. I'd play spoiler to the Packers next week at Lambeau, but really? Does it matter? And that's the part of the equation that gets me the most heated. Hey, McCaskies, John Fox, Jay Cutler, your pathetic display this year once again robbed us of a Packer-Bear rivalry game in December. Virginia, is there a Santa Claus? No, Virginia, because you killed Santa, and you killed Christmas again. I said good day. Hey, Jeff Fisher got axed today in L.A. His loss yesterday tied him for the most in NFL history, so good to see a former Bear breaking records. Well, the good news is that after the holidays, we won't have to talk about the Bears anymore. We can turn our attention to the Blackhawks, who won once again last night without Jonathan Toews and Corey Crawford. They made pretty easy work of the Stars and are currently number one in the Western Conference. So rest easy. We got a winner this winter, and don't count out the Bulls either. After a couple losses, they beat up on the Heat over the weekend and are in second place in the Central behind LeBron Braun. Long way to go, but if the season ended right now, they'd be the number five seed in the East, and they'd play D. Rose in the Knicks in the first round. Oh, one can dream, right? Also, don't look now, but the Northwestern Wildcats have a 7-2 record and have a few games left to pad the sked before they start playing the Big Ten. To give you an idea, the 7-2 record puts them eighth in the Big Ten standings right now. Eighth! And Michigan State and Michigan, who are great teams, are behind them. Oof, it's going to take a lot for the Wildcats to break their curse and make the tourney this year. But hey, still optimistic, okay? We're still optimistic. And finally, the Golden Globes nominations came out today, and for like 300 people, this is a huge story. For the rest of us, can't wait to accidentally stumble upon the telecast after watching playoff football, right? Well, that's the carryout for December 12, 2016. To celebrate the cold, we're selling yellow snow. Hey, don't worry about it. The yellow is mustard.
Coming up, Rob Martyr's news, plus Touche. Dave Lundy and Chris Veronis here to talk about Russia, China, the F-35, whatever. Trump tweets, so much to talk about. It's Monday in Chicago. It's Monday in the USA. Here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché. You
go, right? It's been too long. It's been too long.
I missed our song,
baby. It's been too long. It's the Download here on 720 WGN, and it's Mondays, and it's time for Touché. It's been our regular segment here on the Download throughout the political season 2016, and we continue now. Post-election, Dave Lundy, Democratic strategist, in for Chris Roebling. Chris Veronis, a Republican strategist. Chris Roebling promised that he's listening.
He says he's listening.
He's
right listening
now.
Across the ocean. He's like literally
notes.
Half a world
and
away.
And why he wants, I know he's chomping at the bit to talk about Donald Trump. We haven't had him on since the election, but let's start right away with the intelligence briefings saying that Russia played a role in at least tampering with the American elections. How big of a story is this to you, Dave?
Well, look, I view this a couple of ways. First of all, the fact that Donald Trump doesn't feel it's important for the president of the United States to sit through intelligence briefings. He's only had four since he's been elected. And he said, I think he said this today, that, yeah, I don't see why I need to listen to the same words every day for the next 8 years. And you know, all those.
I like how he said 8 years. And he goes, it could be 8 years. Like, yeah. He threw a nice little like, hey, I'm back in campaign mode already.
All those who care about national security, their heads are going. Poosh. So there's that. But the other thing is that, look, I was a poli-sci major, but my focus was Soviet studies. Soviet Union, you remember that?
Sure.
And so the idea that a Republican candidate is wrapping his arms so tightly around Russia, and when the CIA comes out and they say that Russia interfered in our elections to try to elect Donald Trump, and the guy who's the Republican president-elect says, I believe Russia over the CIA... Houston, we've got a serious problem.
You see
problem.
It that way, Chris? You see it that way?
Well, this expect
a different tune to come out of Donald Trump soon. This is not a tenable position for Donald Trump at all, especially when you have Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan saying,
came out today,
we need to look into this. Unfortunately, we haven't had a good track record in this country of looking under the hood with our intelligence failures. We didn't see the end of the Soviet Union coming. We did. We messed up weapons of mass destruction.
Famously, right, right.
And so this is, I'm glad to see Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan kind of asserting their independence. And it's a smart move for them politically. It's smart, a triangulation type of move, because there's going to be some times when they're going to want to peel away from Donald Trump.
Well, we heard Adam Kinzinger was on Ro Khan kind of saying the same thing, that, like, you know, regardless, this could happen next time to the other party. I mean, right. The idea that this, right. If there's meddling involved. The one thing about the intelligence briefing, and I'm trying to step back and be like, everything is being fed to me by the media in one way or the other. But what Donald Trump is saying, what I hear him saying, is a lot of it is repetitive. The same stories. And when there's developments, call me. This is how I'm going to change the way we work. I'm a CEO. I'm a business CEO. I don't need updates every day on the same thing. Tell me when something changes.
Yeah, but his biographer, the guy who wrote The Art of the Deal, will tell you that Donald Trump has the attention span of a gnat. And that's the reason that he's not taking these intelligence briefings, because they require concentration. Well, guess what? He's going to discover very quickly that being president of the United States requires an intense focus and concentration, because you've got so many huge things coming at you so fast. I mean, you could have a crisis with ISIS on the same day you have a crisis with North Korea and a crisis in the Middle East and a crisis at home. And you got to be able to focus. And, you know, this is what people like me said throughout the entire campaign, was this guy just doesn't have isn't up to the job, doesn't have the character. And what concerns me, look, I've tried, Justin. You remember election night. I was, you know, a little upset.
A little.
Just a smidge. A teensy-weensy bit upset. And so I've kind of stepped away. People think I died on Facebook because, I haven't been posting 8, 9, 10 things a day anymore, because I've really been trying to absorb and accept what happened here. And every time I try to re-engage, you know, he does something like make these crazy appointments, like a guy who's one of Vladimir's closest buddies to be Secretary of State.
Let's talk about Rex Tillerson. So, I mean, it's not unlike everything with the appointments that we've been seeing. A lot comes out in the media, and then maybe something else comes out when he actually, you know, I we're not sure. Tillerson's name has been thrown around. It's bantied about. CNN is reporting
for Trump's own amusement.
Yeah, exactly. But they're reporting tomorrow we'll have an announcement on who the Secretary of State appointment or nomination is. But, I mean, let's for touche's sake, Rex Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil, interesting choice. I mean, not necessarily a guy who with experience in government and any sort of diplomatic relations. Why him?
I think before it's over, we might have another candidate for Secretary of State beyond Rex Tillerson. He's the CEO of ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil's got concerns all over the country. I guess he knows
the world.
Putin.
Yeah.
Did I say country? I guess he knows Putin. So what's happening right now, and, you know, there's been a whole series of trial balloons. Trump's seeing that this guy could get a confirmation fight. There are a lot of Republicans don't want to have him as Secretary of State. And so
why? Because he's a businessman? Because he's not?
Well, the Putin thing.
Yeah.
It's just
to Russia.
It's just this little twist that we don't need right now, especially with Congress on the verge of investigating these hacks.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not just that he's got the Putin thing. It's that you've got the entire campaign. Trump has been denying Russia's involvement in the hacking. Remember the famous line he said at the debate about, it could be Russia, it could be China, it could be a 400-pound guy in his mom's bedroom. Okay, you know.
His own bedroom.
And he, right. Sorry, his mom's house. But he said that again over the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, dude, it's not just the CIA. 17 intelligence agencies in October came out, and for the record, they came out, and Obama wanted a bipartisan thing talking about how Russia was interfering with the election, and the loudest voice in the room saying, don't say that. I'm not letting you say that. It's Mitch McConnell, who now suddenly is saying, oh, yeah, sure. Well, now the election's done. We can have an investigation. Yeah, right. Goodness gracious. Well, this is just so offensive.
And again, I mean, just to sort of level set this, okay, we have separation of powers. Congress has a say. I mean, that should let you sleep at night, Dave.
yes, that's the Republican thing. Congress. I'm relying on Mitch McConnell.
Right. So that's one thing. The other thing is, too, it is inevitable
that Donald Trump, something between a fall or an implosion will happen. Inevitable. Every president, that's happened to every president. So the question will be, how frequent will this will be, and how will he
how
react
he, when he
to
stumbles
it?
And how he reacts.
Because
right.
that will be his moment of humility, which is an odd thing to think of.
Yeah, Chris Veronis, Dave Lundy, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get a little bit more. Touche here in the Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
All right, it's Touche, Dave Lundy, and Chris Veronis in studio tonight talking about all things politics. You know, this should be, I guess here comes the inauguration, January 20th, but this, you know, you almost feel like this should be somewhat of a slow time. The holidays coming up, but with Donald Trump, it just seems to every day it just ramps up. Obviously, the nominations are coming out. Chris, what do you think of the appointments so far? I mean, liberals have been upset with the appointments to Department of Labor, EPA, of course, Pruitt from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your thought on
I'm 90-95% in love with the appointments. I think they're all fantastic. I mean, I let Dave defend the education bureaucracy that's failing America's children, you know, and that's fine. You can do that, Dave. But I mean, the Trump one, you know, he's not an ideologue, but these appointments, a lot of them do have an ideological spark, which is fantastic. And even take ideology out of it. Mattis, the defense secretary pick. Widely respected across the board, a guy who travels with 2,000 books. So there's a lot to like in the Trump appointments, and I know Dave.
And now I give the floor to Dave.
Be Niagara.
Dave, what's your thought on the Trump cabinet, how it's shaping up?
Well, to quote my cousin Vinny,
everything that guy just said is beep.
Yeah. No, sorry. look, I think that the appointments I think what the appointments tell you is that the stories that came out before the election when they were trying to vet vice presidents, and the story was that Donald Trump Jr. came to, I forgot who it was, and offered the vice presidency and said, you will be the most powerful. Right. It was Kasich, said you will be the most powerful vice president in history because Donald Trump will put you in charge of domestic and foreign policy. And if you look at these appointments are Mike Pence appointments. These appointments are people other than Tillerson, I think, and Mad Dog Mattis, the defense secretary. These are appointments who are people who are from the ideological far extreme right of the Republican Party. You know, you talked about the education secretary. I'm not defending the education bureaucracy, but I don't think you should put somebody in charge of education who doesn't believe in public education. I don't think you should put somebody in charge of the EPA who
We should put someone in charge who's in favor of quality education.
No, she's against public education, period. She said this.
Well, last I checked, she's in favor of public schools improving through a little competition. And what's wrong with that?
That's actually not what she's in favor of. But look, my biggest frustration is with the EPA. Because this is something near and dear to my heart, and you appoint somebody to EPA who not only doesn't believe in climate change, but doesn't believe in the EPA. Probably
has
would like to
the
see
EPA
it.
Is one
has
of the
sued
attorney
EPA
generals
repeatedly,
suing, yeah, yeah.
over and over, and crusaded
Dave,
against the EPA.
We've seen this in some a couple of the appointments. We've seen, I think it's the idea of banting about Rick Perry for Department of Energy when he wants to get rid of the Department of Energy, or he ran on that concept. We see it with the Department of Labor, the guy who was part of Carl's Jr. saying he didn't want a minimum wage. It's almost as if some of the benchmark points of the Obama administration, that they're hiring people to sort of repeal that stuff.
Well, they're repealing the Obama administration, what they're trying to do. But look, that's their right. They won the election. I'm putting it in air quotes only because Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes. But anyway, they won the election. And so they have a right to go in the direction that they choose. They don't have a right to claim a massive mandate. You know, Donald Trump still keeps lying to people when he said the other day, I won in one of the biggest electoral college votes in history. Landslides, yeah, 46 yeah. out of 58. Come on.
This is kind of sour grapes up to a certain point for me, because like you're talking about EPA. You're also talking about administration through executive fiat, because he didn't have the leadership to push through policy through Congress, enacted his own rules and heaped them down on the coal industry. Say whatever you will about the merits of coal, but I mean, like, to do that through executive action is insane. And it's ridiculous. And it's not American.
You don't know what you're talking about.
You do it through Congress. You pass laws.
Chris, the laws that the Obama administration went after the coal industry on was called the Clean Air Act, passed by Congress. And it was under the Supreme Court ruling in U.S. versus Massachusetts.
Do you deny that Obama was the most activist president when it comes to executive actions?
Not only do I deny it, but the numbers don't prove you out.
He couldn't lead Congress, so he had to do everything.
Chris Obama had far fewer executive orders than George W. Bush. That's just a fact. Now, if we can argue about whether Obama shouldn't have done certain things like DACA.
What he's applying those executive actions to, sweeping policy like immigration, environment. I mean, this is sort of seismic. You would think the regular route would be legislative, but instead for Obama,
the Clean Power Plan
was executive action.
The Clean Power Plan was executive action mandated under the Clean Air Act, according to the Supreme Court of the United States, who found that carbon pollution was pollution. It's not a rewrite. It's history. You just have to read it.
There have been a lot of rewrites of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act.
Forget Touche. Let's call it rewrite.
No. Look. This is, you happen to be treading on ground, my friend, that I know very well.
I like it.
The Clean Power Plan was done under the provisions of the Clean Air Act, but it was done by executive order, and it will be revoked by executive order.
Is this going to be? Let me ask you.
So there you go. I mean, like, isn't there a little bit of? Aren't you a little upset, a little sad, that this thing that Obama put in is so easily removed by the next president who happens to be Donald
Trump? I'm upset, but that's the way the law works. I mean, he's
it wasn't intended
to be a law. It didn't need to be a law. This wasn't Obama going rogue. This was Obama moving forward on a ruling of the Supreme Court.
I mean, no one saw Donald Trump coming in, and
I think it's a good place then, but I also think you're going to see the same action from this president who will use executive action the same way, and it'll be interesting to see how both sides react to that. You know, obviously the Republican side was upset with Obama. We'll see how they respond when Trump does it as well.
Well, and we'll see when they abolish the filibuster in the Senate, when the Donald can't get past the filibuster for some of his appointments and some of his Supreme Court.
Tomorrow's supposed to be Secretary of State. You guys think it's going to be Tillerson? That's where we'll leave it.
Absolutely.
You think so?
I think it will be. I hope it isn't.
Chris Baronis, Dave Lundy in studio. Touche. It's great to see you guys. It's been so long,
Good to be here.
We will be off next week, and we will return at the beginning of 2017 after the holidays with a brand new, fresh take on American politics. Are we ready?
We are ready. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. No.
Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I am doing well, and you, sir?
How did the snowblower work this weekend? Were you killing it?
You know what? I went past Glenview, into Wilmette, down to Glencoe, along the lakefront. It was amazing.
I feel like you need like a snow band behind you, like a cool, like almost like carolers or something. Could be like your own band when you're doing the snowblower.
Man, I fired that puppy up. I put it into high gear. Nothing was going to stop me.
I was thinking about it when I'm like, I should go shovel. And then I didn't. But then I realize what's happening is that the association, you know, pays for someone. I live in sort of a townhome association, and they pay for a service to come out and shovel. And they open your gate and shovel to your door.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, that's an extra added touch. I thought it was just the sidewalk in front. But now I'm starting to realize that I literally don't have to do anything. I mean, I think I... just sat inside the window and watched them like,
Justin's got a single malt going. You know, he's got the jabonis out there, you know, really? shoveling the walk.
It couldn't be. I mean, I think about like growing up in Wonder Lake. I mean, we would have to shovel the whole driveway, the whole thing, and we were all the shovel to the door, and the neighborhood would get together for these shoveling. I feel like I've regressed. Like, I feel like my hands are super, I'm just super soft now.
No, you know what?
Oh, it's just my skin is so nice, so moisturized.
There are a few spots that I actually have to get out the conventional shovel.
Yeah.
And it literally takes about two passes, but I'm working up a sweat. It's terrible. That's why I love the snowblower, man.
I love it, man. I'm glad to hear that. And the people of Glenview are glad as well.
And Wilmette and Glencoe and along the lake. It's a good day.
It's a good day. All right, here's the news sponsored by ExecutiveGreenCarpetCleaning.com. Coming up, we're going to talk with Ron West, the former Second City alum. He's on the main stage here in the 80s, and now he's at Twister Dickens. We'll talk with him coming up. But first, let's get an update on tonight's news. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the new holiday theater classic, Twist Your Dickens, is now on stage at the Goodman Theater. It's the third year for the Christmas Carol parody. When I read that this year, the role of Scrooge would be played by longtime Second City actor, writer, and director Ron West, well, I had to have him here, right? He's one of my favorites. Wes is a former actor on the main stage at Second City dating back to the mid-80s.
Well, that's going
to
turn off your listeners, Justin.
They're going to love it.
Okay.
He's been out in Hollywood writing, acting, and teaching improv. Wes is known for his roles in movies like Backdraft and television programs like Third Rock from the Sun. And he's also a consultant on the improvised comedy Whose Line Is It Anyway? It is a pleasure to have Ron West at the big table tonight. Ron, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
I thought there would be an applause effect right there.
We'll put it in post. Right. Okay. So, talk about the what brings you to Chicago to do this show. I mean, you're playing the role of Scrooge.
Yes, when I was told that I would have a job at Christmas time, I rejoiced. So that's why I'm here. But to have this job at Christmas time, I actually have to have two jobs because I'm directing the show as well.
So, as a director and playing the role of Scrooge, how do you sort of organize yourself? I mean, is that something you're used to because you've done a lot of direction where you've been in the show?
It is something that I'm used to, but mostly when we start doing the show, I kind of got to just take the director hat off totally and concentrate on the words. My dear friend Will Klinger is my understudy, mm-hmm. and so when we were doing the technical rehearsals, a lot of times Will would go through all the lines and the moves and everything while I looked at all the tech. So I was very grateful he could be there.
What do you know about the role of Scrooge? I mean, you're obviously familiar with it, but...
When we did the show in L.A. for the first time, we were having one of those grueling technical rehearsals. And so we're on stage and they're lighting us and stuff, and so there's nothing to do. So that's when I, for the first time in my life, I got my phone out, went to iBooks, and actually read the story while we were teching the show. And it actually gave me a bunch of different ideas of something to do. I've seen all the movies like everybody else, but then actually having the actual Dickens there was very inspirational.
As a comedian, as an improviser, I mean, does it help to be able to use a classic text like that to find things to improvise around?
I don't know, but I can tell you that when in doubt, it's a lot easier to improvise as Scrooge because you can get away with a lot of stuff. You know,
how much improvisation is being done in a show like Twister Dickens? Because it's a written parody.
It's about maybe a fifth of it. And I never really sat down and figured it out. Maybe about a fifth of it. So we're kind of going from book to improv to book to improv.
You know, a lot of people who might be listening and hearing that you were a mainstay at Second City, you would think, oh, well, they just improvise shows up there. And that's not really the case. I mean,
it's a written show,
so it's almost like a fifth at Second City as well.
Actually, at Second City, it's probably more like two-thirds written, one-third improv. Those shows never happen by magic. You think it does because you go there and you see them improvise, and it's so funny, but putting it together is a whole different kettle of fish.
Well, there's so much philosophy and theory that go into it that has been, you know, repackaged and argued and debated over the years about improv as an art form, as a, you know, like all that kind of thing. But you, as somebody who's been a part not only of the Second City family, but you've been able to use improvisation and the tools that you learned here in Chicago in Hollywood working on different projects, I mean, improv has played a huge role in your life.
Yes, it has. But you mentioned improv in Hollywood just a second ago there. And I think there's this there's sort of this trend now where it's like, oh, let's improvise on TV, or let's improvise, like Christopher Guest, let's improvise in this film, and it'll be so great. And yeah, it is. It's great and it's fun. But number one, improv in movie and TVs is nothing new. Go look at Father of the Bride with Spencer Tracy, where he's making the drinks. He can't remember the names of the actors or the characters or anything. He's obviously improvising, just making the drinks. It's shot in one. Look, it also happens to be a drinking scene. Look at Steve McQueen and James Garner passing out the drinks in The Great Escape. It's obviously improvised. And The Great Escape was, the script was not written yet or completed when they were shooting that. So improv in TV and films is done because you have to.
Right.
Not because, oh, this will be so arty and cool. You have to.
But you've seen a push in the last decade where because everyone seems to be in awe of what's happening with improvisation or actors, that's almost the premise, the idea of a Curb Your Enthusiasm or, like you said, Christopher Guest, or even shows you've worked on.
Yes, Curb Your Enthusiasm went in with let's improvise it. But remember, it's a very narrow brand of improvising, just the way Whose Line is a very narrow brand. On Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, the tenet of improv is to say yes and, but Larry gets to say no, and he says it plenty.
Right. And there's also premises set up in advance.
Right.
It's essentially just working the words out in improvisation, not necessarily the concepts.
That's right, and not necessarily working out the story. The story is already worked out. In Whose Line, there's a lot of safety nets for the improvisers there. It's all the games are built for TV and built to be edited. So,
Ron West is my guest. He's the director and he plays Scrooge and Twister Dickens at the Goodman Theater running towards to the end of December, right? We're saying December 31st.
There's going to be a December 31st show. I call it now.
This is breaking news. Ron West in studio. We'll take a quick break here on the download. We'll come back with more. Stay with us. Ron West is my guest in studio here on 720 WGN, the download. Ron West is the director and the actor. He plays Scrooge and Twister Dickens at the Goodman Theater, run until December 31st. Longtime Second City main stage actor. He did shows at ETC out at Northwest. This was all throughout the 80s, and he also still teaches. Do you still teach at Second City Hollywood?
I do. Yeah. In fact, my students are closing their show tonight, and normally I would be giving them a diploma, but I got to be here.
Yeah. Talk about that. I mean, Second City has just exploded when it's come to so many people wanting
to
come through.
Yes, it's only a matter of time before everybody in Chicago takes an improv class.
Right, exactly. I mean, for you as a teacher, as someone who's studied and dedicated their life to improv, is that a good thing that millions want to come through the program?
This is the first time I've heard that I dedicated my life to improv.
I did not know
I had done that. Oh, it seems like I did. Okay.
Sorry. I assumed.
You know what? I think it's great that so many people have done it. It's also great that so many people play baseball and softball. I play baseball and softball all the time. But there's no way at any time in my life that I could have ever been a Major League Baseball player. I think about what those guys do. I still think about wanting to emulate them and try to do it that way. And they make me feel great when they make an error. And I'm like, you know what? I did that same thing in a game a couple of days ago where I started to throw the ball before I caught it. That's exactly what he did there. So, and I'm really glad I have that as part of my life. But for me to get to that super top level, I could never do. So improv can be fun. It's just for everybody who takes it. But getting up to the top of that mountain up there is, you've got to be very, very talented. It's a tough job.
Well, Ron, there's a difference, too, between the students you might have in Hollywood as opposed to the student who's coming through the conservatory in Chicago.
That's true. I think in Chicago it's more a fabric of the city. It's like kind of like being in your own garage band. When I was here, everybody had their own improv group playing at some little bar or something, all of us hoping to be pros someday. in L.A., it's more people that are kind of trying to reinvent themselves.
Or get a new skill or something.
Yes, for resume, yes. They're right? often encouraged by their commercial and theatrical agents to take an improv class so you can be funnier in your auditions.
Mm-hmm. Is it changed the way you teach? I mean, if you're teaching for that, for skills, things like that?
Even when they tell me, oh, the syllabus is this now, I still do the same thing I've always done. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Okay, so I mentioned, I kind of teased out in the first segment this idea that the idea of improvisation has been vetted, it's been debated, it's been pushed around. This concept that there really was almost like a split where you had the Second City Guard, the Sheldon Patinkins and the Bernie Solins, who said, you know, improv is a great form that is used to inform a great sketch show or written show. Mm-hmm. Then you had the Del Close faction that inspired people like the Upright Citizens Brigade that said, no, improvisation is an art form on its own. Mm-hmm. That has gone back and forth. Where do you stand on that?
I think both of those are true. I learned a lot from Bernie Solins. I was talking to some writers the other day. And we were trying to describe what the problem with this play was. And I said, the problem is that the playwright is trying to use information as action. And Bernie Solins would say to us, information is not action, which was a really great writing lesson. Another thing that Bernie would do is he would look at an improvisation. And a lot of times he would say, when they would start to pick it apart, is, okay, the stuff... The ending of your improvisation is where you should begin the written scene. Mm-hmm. And when I'm directing the shows, I direct a show, I'll do sort of like Bernie would do, where I'll find some improvisations and hone them into a written sketch. Sometimes there's not much of the improvisation left. I also enjoy doing fully improvised shows, but the written show is easier to sell, and here's why I think it's easier to sell. If you did a fully improvised three-act show every night, your actors would go crazy in a couple of months. To keep from going crazy, what they would do is repeat bits and still improvise some stuff. But
stuff
they would
that worked.
That
right.
Stuff that worked. Right. They would repeat bits. I don't think you could assure the quality of every evening's improvisation for a paying audience. If you could, then that would be the next step in improvisation, right. is that. And people say, oh, it can be done, but...
And people have tried it,
but the same group. You know, it's in a way, it's not financially practical. If I had six actors, let's say that they were able to do it 3 weeks, or I'm sorry, they were able to do three performances a week where they were fresh and they were good. But now I've got to have 6 or 12 other people on the payroll to also keep the quality up. You can't pay that many people.
Ron West is my guest in studio, longtime Second City member. He's a main stage actor.
I was just doing an accounting bit there for everybody. I thought that'd be funny.
He's a director, and he's also playing Scrooge in the new show at the Goodman Theater, Twister Dickens. It's third year in production at the Goodman, running till the end of December. Music plays a big role in your career as well. You know, Second City will always be known for improv, and it's also known for its writing. But the musical numbers, the parodies, the songs, even improv around music is a big staple of that company, and it's prevalent in your career more than anybody's. I mean, talk about what it means to be able to create music around comedy.
When I first saw Second City in 1984, I really... liked the songs. The songs at that time, the music was by Fred Kaz. And I really liked them because the songs were about something else besides a boy and a girl trying to find out if they're in love or not, which is what was typically in musicals. So I liked the topics of them. And I got to do some of the songs that I had seen ultimately, and I was really excited to be able to do that. And I was bound and determined that I was going to write the big, hilarious musical closer. And it wasn't until sometime later that, I think I'm quoting my friend Barb Wallace here, that I realized that the songs decorate the show. Hmm. The scoring that Fred would do is more of the fabric.
The piano underneath, right.
More of the fabric of it. And nowadays in the shows... not only at Second City, but in our show, there's a lot more needle drops in between the sketches. But his scoring was more a fabric, not only of in between, but like a movie score. He could manipulate the audience with what he was playing, and that's what we're doing a lot of time. So I love the songs, and my songwriting partner Phil Swan and I have written a bunch of musicals now. People versus Friar Lawrence, which was out at Chicago mm-hmm, Shakes mm-hmm. a few years ago, and we did it at Steppenwolf this summer.
And the Romeo and Juliet.
It's the Romeo and Juliet story told from Friar Lawrence's perspective. But now my thing is with the songs is personally, there's people that are going to disagree with me. I like it to really be part of the story. I like it to be interwoven into the story if possible. I like there to be a who, what, and where, just like any other scene. And sometimes people just want to do a funny set of lyrics that there's dance steps to.
Right.
And I don't really like that.
Ron West is my guest in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get tonight's news. His Second City alumni, who is directing and starring as Scrooge in Twist Your Dickens at the Goodman Theater, running till December 31st. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio. Ron West, longtime Second City stalwart. That's what I would call you.
Stalwart. You know, I belong now to is that another union I have to join? Because I belong to Equity. I belong to SAG-AFTRA. I belong to the WGA. I belong to ASCAP.
Wow.
And I recently joined the Society of Directors and Stage Choreographers, which is crazy because that I would ever be in an organization where my name was close to the word choreographer. that's impossible to me. I'm a terrible dancer.
I was going to say, you're not known necessarily for movement?
I am not, but that being said, I have staged hundreds of musical numbers.
Right. Ron West is the director, and he plays Scrooge in Twist Your Dickens at the Goodman Theater, which is running till December 31st, the parody of the Christmas Carol. We had some of the writers in last year talking about the show. I think about
Peter Gwynn and Bobby Mort are the writers.
I think about your career and you know, everything from your time in Chicago to what you've done in Hollywood and worked in TV, but also at Second City there. I mean, you have really dedicated yourself to being an artist. Whether it be through musicals, whether it be through comedy, whether it be through improvising, you have dedicated yourself to that.
That's very nice of you to say.
Is there a point? There's a lot of times.
You're going to ask me why. I have no
answer. No, I know. I was going to say, you know, I think about a lot of people who may say, you know what, I'm going to go in this direction. Maybe I'll get into advertising. Maybe I'll become a lawyer. Maybe I'll do something else. What has kept you being able to serve your craft?
That is an excellent question. Why keep doing it?
Why keep doing it?
I'm just trying to get my 10,000 hours in. You know, I think eventually I might get good at it. You know, I have a lot of interests. You know, I've written plays and directed them and stuff. And so I'll work on a play for a while, and then I'll get tired of that, and then I'll go over here and work on a sketch show, and I'll be like, hey, maybe I could take some of the stuff from that sketch show and put it over in this world. Or, oh, maybe I could take something from that musical and put it over in that over there. So I'm just a guy trying to make a living, really.
We have a lot of people in here who are in the arts. It might be in Broadway, maybe in Hollywood, maybe here in Chicago. And one of the things that they talk about when we really get into the challenges of the work is the idea of rejection. There's a lot in this business where, Ron, you've done tremendous work. I mean, you're an idol to me in the sense that I wanted to get into comedy after watching you on stage at Second City.
Wow.
And then I think
how's
about
that working out for
it's
you.
It's going great. It's going great. I'm using the same things. Yeah, right? No, I need a little piano. I'm interested in how you and your career, when you think about, you know, all of the things that you write and you submit to different places and all the different sketches.
There is a lot of rejection involved.
How do you handle it?
After a while, it's just part of the gig, you know. Let's go back to another baseball analogy. If you get a hit 3 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer, right? At Second City, if you improvise 1 out of 10 sketches, it's probably more like 0.5 or 1 out of 20 sketches is repeatable. That's a terrible percentage, yeah, right. You know. So in baseball, 7 out of 10, you fail, but you're great, you know. So I figure if I just, you know, land, you know, 1 out of 10, I'll be happy.
You've been in a couple decades now of doing this work, of doing comedy, satirizing at Second City, and sort of being on the edge throughout your career.
Yeah.
How have you seen a change? I mean, from the what audiences will accept?
That's interesting.
Because we're having an issue here in Chicago where the Second City, probably know this, the Second City cast complaining about how the audiences are getting more brazen. They're yelling things out. They're disrupting the show. It's becoming a different experience than it might have been 10, 15, 20 years ago. Do you notice that? Do you sense that as someone who's lived through these different ways?
I don't envy anybody that has to sit through that. I haven't been there for that. I've only heard about that. I know, you know, there have been, I have been in shows where, yes, audience members were problems, and it's never easy to deal with it. The situation you're talking about, like I said, I've only heard about. Could something have been handled differently by somebody? Probably. You know, can I go back to another baseball analogy?
Of course.
Okay. But this speaks to this issue right here. I hate going to the ballpark because of adults swearing in public. It's like, what in the world? One beer turns you into this? And there's people with kids here?
Right.
I've made a lot of money swearing on stage because you know, it was people liked the rage aspect and they were laughing at it, okay? So I had a permit from the police to swear in public, right? But this thing where adults are just standing up and saying this, I'm like, this is crazy. And it's not just hockey games. It's, you know, it's everywhere. So there is something maybe in our society about people unable to behave properly in public anymore. We know when we're on the train and somebody is talking too loud on the train. You're like,
you're right.
Where did you?
Our whole world is up
here. Right. Right. So there is something in general about, and it's not just since the advent of Trump either, with people shooting their mouths off.
No.
There's something that's going on where people don't know how to behave in public anymore.
You found a way. I mean, in your career, you do a lot. Like you said, you've written musicals and plays, and you spend a lot of time in the theater. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be doing comedic work in the theater, but you're on stage at the Goodman Theater. You're not going to have this kind of thing. Do you ever think back to the days when you were in the back of the room, when you were in the back of the bar, and you had to sort of hold court, and it was a different environment where people had a beer in their hand and they're ready to shout out?
Well, look, I don't want to brag. if people – I don't know if I would do this now or not, but there was more than one time when I was tired of somebody and I said, you're leaving now, and I took them out of the room myself. And it would really bother me when there was a couple of the women that we were working with would really bother me when my sister, I call my sister Fran Adams, like if they were, I mean, she could handle it, but
right.
After a while, I didn't like that either.
I'm always interested, as someone who's always creating material, whether it be for the stage or for television or film, acting as you do and writing as well. Do you notice when comedy starts to change course, when something that wasn't PC is now PC, or when something else that used to be funny isn't funny anymore, taboo? I mean, do you notice that as a comedy writer and to have to navigate around it?
I think about it sometimes, you know, because I don't want to hurt people's feelings, you know. I'll give you an example of one of my habits is a movie that I saw when I was in college that destroyed me and kept destroying me was Animal House. Mm-hmm. And fairly recently, I saw Animal House on television, and I was like, you know what? This wouldn't get made today, for one thing, and I think some of this is not funny anymore. You know, it seems what seems so irreverent just seems mean, right? So I think there's a difference between irreverent and mean. I think there's also a difference between being edgy and just expressing your rage. You know, a scene can be edgy if you're just expressing your rage. I don't think it's a scene.
Ron West is he's directing and he's playing Scrooge and Twister Dickens at the Goodman Theater. Longtime television writer, stage actor. Chicagoan turned Hollywooden. I don't know what's in LA.
Hollywoodian.
What do you say?
usually on TV I say, "Hey, you kids, get away from that Grand Prix." So that's what I say.
That's what you say.
That's Ron my West. Job on TV.
It was a pleasure having you. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
We're helping you get in the holiday spirit with our presentation of A Christmas Carol this Friday, December 16th, from 10 to noon. I'm excited about this, Pete. As you may or may not know from the press release from Access Hollywood, E! News, things like that, I am playing the role of Bob Cratchit.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm excited about
meaty role.
It meaty, like it's right in there. You know, I mean, I know that I, you know, have a responsibility to be the sort of clean cut, you know, sort of working class guy. Like that's what I'm going for. You know, they're really kind of taking, they're typecasting me a little bit in the way that Cratchit's kind of the sex symbol of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, he is.
And they're like, well, we should have Kaufman do it. So it's just, you know, I think I'd be better for Scrooge. Bill Leff is playing Scrooge. I mean, he's got the movie credits to his name.
Major League.
And, you know, he's great. So and it's his time slot. I mean, I might have a bigger issue if we were doing a Christmas Carol live at night. I'd be like, hey, wait. This is my game. Right. But it's a lot of this. Is there any way I can go home early?
Is that how you're going to play it?
I'm thinking about like real kind of shaky. Like I feel it's what it would be mid 19th century, right? I think that he would be very malnutrition. He doesn't get a lot. He's got a great family. His family loves him, but you know he's got to work and he doesn't eat. He gives it to Tiny Tim instead. So it's a lot of this kind of thing, right? So I'm thinking about knocking off, sir. Merry Christmas, like that kind of thing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, could you feel the shiver?
I could feel a shiver.
Yeah.
Well, do it again, because I had my eyes staring at you, so let me close my eyes and see if I can feel it. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's pretty much the rest of my work, sir. Should I put an English accent on it? That's all, sir. Can I go home with my family now, sir? I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, I would go English accent.
Yeah. I still have a week. I mean, the show's on Friday, so I've got 4 or 5 days.
Have you watched it recently to do some research?
I was trying to convince my son to watch it this weekend, but we came across there's a Mickey Mouse version of it, and I'm like, no, we're not doing that. There's a cartoon version that maybe I'll do, but I'm not going to do Christmas Carol with Mickey. You know, like I think, like the Ghost of Christmas Past is Goofy. Like, Pluto is, you know, the dog is Ghost of Christmas Future. No thanks. You'll hear your favorite WGN radio host tell their classic tale of Ebenezer Scrooge and his changed heart, and of course the side story, which is Bob Cratchit. Subplot. It's the B storyline, really, if you think about it. You know, that's one. Two is what's happening with Cratchit and his kids. It's true. And you want to check out the audition videos of our cast? I haven't checked to see if mine's up there. I did audition. A lot of good it did me because I came in and I said I want to read for Scrooge.
And they said no.
No, I read for Scrooge.
Oh, wow.
There weren't a lot of notes. A lot of looking at their phones while I was doing it. One guy was just eating a hoagie. He was just eating right in front of me while I was doing the audition. So I'm not sure if it was. I mean, it was. In that regard, it was professional, because that's usually what an audition is like. But, you know, I just expected more. So hopefully mine will be up soon. Maybe not. Or maybe they said to put this on the trash.
There's a few up there. I've watched two. I haven't seen yours yet.
WGNRadio.com.
Some really good ones, though. Some funny ones.
So the whole thing sponsored by Lightkeeper Pro Tool Set, Lou Malnati's Taste of Chicago, and Spot Hero. Ron West, man. You know, so many people, I put that up on Facebook today that Ron West was going to be on the show, and so many people reached out to me and been like, I saw Ron West at Second City. It's my first show. He was a mainstay, you know, at Second City in the 80s, mid-80s. And he's so distinctive looking, too. If you look him up, you go, oh, that guy. It's a tall, bald guy with, like, the round glasses. He's got a good look. He's playing Scrooge at the Twist Your Dickens show at the Goodman, running now on stage. Coming up, we got a great show coming up here. Doug Plank's going to join us after 9 o'clock to talk about why Josh Bellamy's still on the squad. I don't get it. I mean, there's sort of a, you know, I was kind of joking on Twitter yesterday, just the idea that maybe he needs to go to like summer camp, like instructional camp with Tom Waddle to learn how to catch a football in the NFL. Because like when the announcer's like, Josh Bellamy, if you're not familiar, is a wide receiver for the Chicago Bears. He's like the fourth or fifth receiver, and he's in the game pretty much because Alshon Jeffrey and Kevin White are not. And he has this really nasty habit of leaving his feet. So he almost jumps to catch the ball. And when he does that, he has a really difficult time bringing the ball down. In the last three games, we saw him in Tennessee, or in Chicago against Tennessee, drop a game-winning touchdown. Hit him right in the numbers. And last week, he had a pretty good game in the snow against the Niners, but he dropped a couple, too. He dropped one that was like a wide, looked like it was going to be a touchdown.
Yeah, when he dropped that pass that perhaps would have gotten them into field goal position for a potential tie
yesterday,
I thought to myself, like, in the old days, like, would Ditka or any of the, would, like, they cut him the next day? Would he just be cut, like, to send a message?
I mean, I don't like to see anyone lose their job.
Yeah, especially around the holidays.
Yeah, but, I mean, this guy's job is to be a wide receiver for the Chicago Bears. And when you're, that last drive with two holding calls.
Yeah, that didn't help.
That they were on their way to winning that game. They were gonna punch it in. They were gonna win, and you know the Cameron Meredith got him down to the 15 holding, got taken back. I think it was, I forgot who got it, maybe Jordan Howard, someone the next one, you know, holding, taking it back. And they got it to fourth down, and he had the first down. That was that was field goal range at that point. That's up to Connor Barth to be the GOAT. But you know, but the idea that he jumps off his and he let the ball hit him right on the shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And he missed it. Hey, you know what? I don't know. Football's one of those games where guys make millions of dollars and become franchise players by making those catches. And the guys that don't play anymore. And in Chicago, we've seen more often than not the latter. You know, where players, when it really counts and need to step up and make a play, they can't. And it's far too often. I don't know if that's a mental thing, if that's a coaching thing, if that's... You know, you heard OB kind of screaming about the coaches need to get these guys ready. But I'm like, I feel like a guy like Josh Bellamy went to college. I don't know where he went to college. But
went to Louisville, I think.
I mean, he's playing Division I wide receivers, probably the number one on his high school team, number one in his college. He probably was drafted in the top. You know, I just feel like it's a guy that at this point, that it's not really about the coaching. You either have it or you don't if you're dropping balls on fourth down in the NFL at the end of games.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Anyway.
I get, they don't have, they're, you know, depleted by injuries. So, you know, he knows the system, you know, because I was like, yo, cut that guy. That's what I was, you know, I was like, but then who do they, you know, a guy that doesn't know it, he's got to learn routes, you know, I don't know. So I don't know if it's possible, but
You don't cut him. I guess this is what we'll talk to Doug about. I mean, Doug's great. I love having Doug. He's my best friend. He really is. But he talked about it, I think it was last week, this idea, or 2 weeks ago, about Alshon Jeffrey being like, this is how you hurt your team. When you're suspended for PEDs, it's not necessarily, you know, yeah, you're out. It's kind of like an injury. It's a four-week injury. But that means the next guy has to step up, and he doesn't have as much talent. And the next guy, every ball that was thrown to Josh Bellamy should have been thrown to Alshon Jeffrey. And this guy's on a franchise tag to try and get a payday next year, and you can't count on him. So as Bears fans, you're like, wait, the guy that was supposed to catch that ball and gets paid to catch that ball isn't there because he took something he shouldn't have, substance-wise? And so we're counting on a fifth receiver special teams guy to make that play? I mean, you can blame it on Josh Bellamy, which you should because he's a receiver, but in all most of the league, he's not there in the fourth quarter making plays like that. That's not his job. His job is to run down on punts and make plays, and he does that. Anyway, it's coming up. We'll talk with Doug Plank. Also, comedian Allison Royer grew up in the Chicago area. She went out to Boston. She was in L.A. She's in L.A. now, and she has a hilarious blog talking about life, about marriage, about pregnancy, and about birth. It's hilariously evil. I forgot. What is it? It's life is everything is literally terrible all of the time. That's the name of her show. Can't wait to talk to her. Can't wait to see her. She's back in town for the holidays. Also coming up, and then at Studio 435, which is coming up at 10 o'clock, which will have the Bangers in studio doing Christmas songs. We are going to have a party up here, Studio 435, at 10 o'clock. So that's all coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. The Bears are-
scrimmage line.
Strong little song there, Pete. The Bears, of course, yesterday lost to the Detroit Lions in Detroit. The Detroit Lions leading the NFC North now with a 9-4 record, which is hard to believe. The Lions are not that great, and the Bears already beat them once this year and should have beat them yesterday. They didn't. Once again, the Chicago Bears seem to outplay their opponent, yet not find the sort of gut check time when they needed to win the game, to actually execute and win. Doug Plank joins us every Monday, good old number 46, one of the best safeties in Bears history, now an analyst for the NFL. Doug, what do you say about a loss like this? This is the kind of thing where you took the leading team in the NFC North down the wire. They should have won that game.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. You know, I really think there was some really great effort at some of their positions. I thought some of the receivers did an outstanding job. As far as, you know, catching some passes and, you know, and even their defensive backs. I mean, I know that they had more penalties than they would have liked, but, you know, the defense overall, I mean, you take two games this year that they gave up more than 30 points, but that was it. And, you know, they generally held teams in the teens and the 20s. So you would expect a team that could do that would have more wins than Chicago Bears.
You know, you look at that, too. I mean, even in the last couple games, we saw a winnable game and a drop touchdown, a couple drop touchdowns against the Titans at home. This game in which, you know, a couple of holding calls and again, another drop, and the Bears could have easily won that game. It feels like, and I hate to say this because I just sound like such a homer, but it feels like the Bears could easily be 6-6 or whatever it would be right now, 7-6 or 6-6, whatever the number is, and competing with a pretty mediocre NFC North.
Yeah, you know, there's no doubt. I think that, you know, they certainly could have had chances to win this game. I think there was one play in particular that was really frustrating to me, and it was a play, you know, when the quarterback had an opportunity, Sam Bradford, you know, had a chance to come in and run for a touchdown. I think the ball was on the 7-yard line.
Yeah, right.
And what really, oh my God, it was just so devastating because, you know, he ran almost on the one hash mark, just straight into the end zone. And it looked to me like there was three or four defensive players for the Bears that had a shot at him. And I mean, I don't know how that happens. I know he's a good quarterback and throw the ball and stuff like that, but you know, quarterbacks aren't known to be runners. And, you know, it was things like that that really just undermined the whole game. I mean, I just thought that one of those four guys certainly could have brought him down.
Well, let's talk about the defense first. I mean, the Chicago Bears, as you said, they threw a stat up that with complete defense, the Bears are top 10 defense right now in the NFL because they're not giving up points and they seem to be playing pretty well, even though they've been sort of hamstrung with a pretty bad offense. But talk about this Bears defense, because again, we've talked about it, the linebackers and the linemen, the defensive tackles and defensive ends really dominated the game.
Yeah, you can almost, I mean, really, they put good pressure on the quarterback. You know, they made him to throw the ball in awkward situations. You know, they had a few opportunities to maybe possibly make interceptions. You know, there was a couple times, you know, from a pass interference, you know, they got themselves in a bad position and they really had no other shot. But, you know, I really look at the defense and I think the defense is playing well enough to win, you know, and that's not to criticize the offense. I know they've got a change at the quarterback position. I think their receivers have played decent. You know, I think they could do a little bit better on the offensive line as far as giving protection. But, you know, overall, like you said, Justin, a lot of these games are very, very close.
Yeah. The Bears secondary has been much maligned all season. They have had trouble. They've had a lot of different names in there that I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that was a guy was in the NFL. But they played this game. I mean, they there were a lot of names making plays. I mean, it was the kid I forgot the guy's name who number 22 came up with a pick six. I forgot the Bears knew how to do that.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. You know, like, again, I think, you know, any interception is really a result of the pressure by the defense, so the defensive line. So, I mean, I can't give enough credit to the defensive line. I thought they did a good job, you know, putting him in a situation where he had to throw the ball. You know, I just look at this team, though. You know, what's so frustrating about it is, you know, that in football, you know, you don't just win a game and then lose a game. Win a game and lose a game. Everything goes by streaks. And I'm just looking at their schedule, you know, tonight looking at it. And, you know, everybody plays by habit. And if you look at the Chicago Bears throughout this season, in preseason, there were four preseason games. They lost three, and then they won one. Then they started opening up the season on October 9th. They lost three games, and then they won one on the 31st of October. Then they lose another three games in November on the 13th, 20th, and 27th. Then they win a game on December 4th. So this whole season, it's been three losses, a win. Three losses, a win. Three losses, a win. They just started on their third loss, you know, this week here. They've got a tough competitors coming up with the Packers, Redskins, and Vikings. And, you know, they just put themselves in a position that, you know, I know there's a lot of people that say, geez, let's put ourselves in a position for a draft choice, Rad, because these wins don't mean anything. Yeah, but they do mean something because, you know, I think two of those remaining three games are going to be home games. And you've got to do everything you can to play for your fans.
Yeah, and I like to hear that, especially from former players. I mean, obviously, to want to play in front of your fans. And the Chicago Bears have not, I mean, honestly, they haven't shown much quit here. That's what's been great about it. I mean, the team has been competing, you know, sans a couple of games, maybe that game against Green Bay earlier in the season, but and that terrible game against Tampa Bay. They haven't. They seem to be playing teams, you know, pretty well. So what do you, where do you put that on? Is that coaching? Is that coaching getting them prepared, even though they know they're out of the playoff picture? Is it on the players with pride? Where does that come from? The idea of stepping up and still playing tight when you know you're out of it.
No, there's doubt. I mean, the coaching staff is really responsible for that, to get those guys and the players in the right mindset. You know, that's not what fans want to hear, though. They want to hear about wins. They don't want to hear about effort. They want to see execution. Yeah. They want to see touchdowns getting scored. They want to see great plays on defense, you know, intercepting balls, returning them, you know, for touchdowns like they did last week. You know, it's all those sort of things that they're really anticipating. And it's just, you know, sometimes when you get into a situation like they have this year where they keep losing three games in a row, they've done that three times, that's devastating. And, you know, playing, you know, spoiler, which is a great position for them to be in now, playing the Packers, Redskins, and Vikings, three teams that are, you know, probably going to make it into the playoffs or have a good chance. You know, there's nothing better than knocking somebody out of the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, before we move on, I mean, let's talk about the offense. We're talking with Doug Plank here on Download. You know, the offensive experience was good for the running back. Running back played well. Jordan Howard had another great game. Matt Barkley is showing himself as a very competent quarterback in the NFL. We saw the receivers make good plays. We also saw them make sort of drop the ball when it counted. Josh Bellamy once again dropping a ball he should have caught, a couple of them actually. Talk about that, because you know what I referenced at the top of the show is I said, well, you know, that's not Josh Bellamy's. I mean, Josh Bellamy should be making those catches, but the real storyline here is Alshon Jeffrey once again. He's not on the field because he let the team down with a suspension, and Josh Bellamy's got to be put in position to make catches on fourth down that might not necessarily be his game.
Yeah, you know, it's too bad because of a mental error. You know, one of their better players is not going to be on the field. It's frustrating. I know, like, you know, the I happen to follow the Arizona Cardinals. They're one of their receivers got caught DUI. Last night. You know, the NFL has 800 number anywhere you are in America. They guarantee that they'll have a car there in 30 minutes wherever you're at. You
really?
Don't have to pay anything. Now, why would a guy get a DUI on any NFL team?
Right.
I mean, a knucklehead needs to be tackled and piled on by the rest of the players. And, you know, so that's what's so frustrating, you know, to not have every single player that they need to win a game. And, you know, you can say, well, that's the coach's fault. Well, you know, I've been around a lot of knuckleheads in my life that are players. And you know what? You can't control everybody. Everybody at some point in time has to make the right decision, you know, when they're alone and being in a situation where they know they shouldn't be in. They got to make the right decision. And, you know, it's things like that when you're putting a team together. You just have to look at who you've got on the team and say, you know what, can I trust this guy?
Yeah.
Can I trust him in the fourth quarter? Will he do the right things off the field? And unfortunately for Chicago Bears, a couple of those things just didn't go their way this year.
Okay, let me ask you this. I mean, has Jordan Howard has played himself into a starting running back position regardless of injuries, because all the running backs are back?
No doubt.
He looks to be a future running back, starting running back. What about Matt Barkley? I mean, do you see this as table scrap time for a Chicago Bears backup third string backup quarterback, or is he playing himself into possibly changing the way the Bears look at their offseason?
I think, you know, he's done an excellent job, and that doesn't mean that they shouldn't look at more quarterbacks. I mean, let's face it, quarterbacks, they are the main target for your offense. Defenses design game plans to hit the quarterback as many times as they can. And if you have a static quarterback, one that sits back in the pocket, you know, that cannot move around, doesn't have good mobility, he's going to get killed in the National Football League because they're going to run exotic blitzes and get him sooner or later. So I thought Barkley did a great job maneuvering around back in the pocket, but also being able to throw the ball accurately down the field. So, but you know, you can never have enough good quarterbacks. So, I mean, I know they're going to continue to look at quarterbacks in the offseason, you know, especially with the situation with Jay. So, you know, I would think that, you know, that's certainly a position that they'll be focusing on early in the route.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Doug, let's put our crystal ball to use. I'm interested. I've seen mock drafts. It's too early, you know, with the Bears going 3 or 4 or 5, wherever they're going to land when it comes to next year's NFL draft. But now I'm seeing more mock drafts say that the Bears may skip going for quarterback because John Fox likes defense and there's some great defensive-minded players at the top of the draft next year. Do you think that the Chicago Bears should go out and draft the quarterback of their future with their number one pick?
I think that based on what their needs are at the end of the year, certainly quarterback happens to be one of them. And, you know, and I think the scenario that you just described, Justin, might have been true back in the 80s, maybe 90s, and even early 2000s. But you look at what's happening right now in the National Football League. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win. Right. You can look at all the top teams. They all have top quarterbacks. You know, yes, it was great during my 70s and 80s. The team could have running games and Earl Campbell and all that sort of thing. Those days are gone. The rules have dictated that if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win a football game. And you need a quarterback that can actually extend plays. You know, just like Dallas's situation, they've got a quarterback that is mobile. Tennessee, the same situation. Tampa Bay, yeah. You know, they've got guys that are big mobile quarterbacks that can extend plays.
Right. The Roethlisberger.
Before, yes, every pass coverage breaks down after 5 seconds. So if you can do that to defenses, you're going to be successful.
Do you think that this Chicago Bears team is improving as the season goes on? I mean, we're seeing losses pile up. You said they're following a terrible sort of formula of 3 losses and a win.
Yes.
But do you see that this team is improving? You know, obviously with so many injuries, the Bears sort of were bitten by the injury bug. But do you think that this team is better than what we saw at the beginning of the year?
You know, they're not giving up that many points. And like I said before, they've only given up 30-some points twice. You know, so they've kept games in reach, and they've been able to score points. It's just that they haven't been able to score enough points, and they haven't been able to get enough turnovers, interceptions, fumble returns. Those are the things. You look back at the great Chicago Bear defenses over the years, even when their offense wasn't very good, they were getting turnovers. And next to points being scored, turnovers are the most important aspect of winning football games. And the Chicago Bears just haven't been able to do that. Even looking at this game, Justin, you can look at some of the great plays, some of the runs by Howard, you know, some of the throws that Barkley made. Those were all good. But the bottom line is they turned some balls over. You know, they didn't necessarily win the turnover battle. So that's where they really need to focus and take advantage of other teams' mistakes.
You know, as we wrap here, I'm interested that the Bears obviously have a big rivalry game with Green Bay here on Sunday, and it doesn't mean much for Chicago because, you know, we're out of it. But Green Bay still has something to play for as they cling to the idea of either wild card or an outside chance of catching the Lions. You know, I mean, this is a kind of game where you'd like to see what kind of Bears team shows up, right?
Well, you know what? It's one of those things I said. You know, I played in many years where, you know, we were not in the playoffs, yet we were playing a team either the next to the last game of the year or the last game that we're fighting for playoff chances. It was so satisfying, so gratifying to go out there and just physically and execute better than that team, score more points, keep them off the board. And they would ask you during the game, what are you guys doing? You're not going anywhere. I said, I know. It's just so much fun beating you every play that we can and seeing that you're going to go home with us after this game is over. And I'm hoping that that's the kind of Chicago Bear attitude, because I promise you that can really propel you into next season and really start something. And that's what the Bears need. I mean, they need to start playing dominating football, you know, like they did against the 49ers.
Yeah. All right, you got me, Doug. One more wasted Sunday. We'll watch one more of these games.
Well, let's see if this win one, lose three.
Yeah, they're not going to win again till in that thing. They wouldn't win until the Vikings and the final. Ah, which is okay. I'll take that too.
It'll be an interesting scenario if this thing plays out throughout. Oh, what blew me away was even in preseason when they had the four preseason games,
same thing.
And they lost three and then won one. So, I mean, they are a team, you know, that's playing the same routine over and over and over again. Let's just hope that, you know, it ends up different here in the last couple games.
Let's hope so. Doug Plank, the former great safety for the Chicago Bears, now an analyst, covers the NFL. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Justin, thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Allison Royer coming up, comedian who used to be here in Chicago, then out in Boston and in L.A., and she's back for the holidays. We're going to talk to her about her shows out on the West Coast, but also about her blog about parenting, about pregnancy, about birth, and her show that is one of my favorite titles of all time. Everything is literally terrible all the time. That's the name of her show. So we'll talk with Allison coming up here. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, it's live from Studio 435. The Bangers are in studio. They're setting up as we speak. We're going to do some Christmas songs tonight. How great is that? They got a show. They're going to be spending Christmas on the 23rd at the Hideout. The Bangers in studio. Sort of a Chicago supergroup, so we will have them in studio. They're warming up. I love it. I love it. Let's get to it, right? It's going to be so good. That's no, that meant nothing about my next segment. It's okay. My next guest is a longtime improviser and stand-up comedian who's currently living in Los Angeles. Allison Royer grew up in the Chicago area, went to Lincoln Way High School, and has performed all over the world, including on stage here in Chicago at I.O. in the Annoyance Theater. She was doing her show at the West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica up to what? A couple months ago now?
Yeah.
But she was forced to have a child.
I had to have a baby. I don't know if somebody else is doing that show at this point, but I had to bow out.
And occasionally write.
Write sometimes. I think I did the first one when I was first pregnant. Okay. It's a 10 o'clock show. It was 10 o'clock on a Monday.
And then what happened? You just lost.
Well, I was super nauseous, and it was 10 o'clock, and I was like, no one can do this. This is insane. I mean, when I was first pregnant, I needed like 20 hours of sleep a night. It wasn't sustainable.
It was not sustainable.
No.
Well, you can read her musings at her blog, This Is Going to Work, One Woman's Relentless Search for Something That Fixes Everything. In it, she talks about her life and the birth of who she calls perfect daughter.
Yeah.
But it's not a blog that takes on the miracle of life or more, I mean, really more so the pain and suffering of it.
Yeah.
From
we
marriage,
should all get behind that.
To pregnancy, birth, and parenting. Allison gives it straight, and it's shocking and hilarious. The blog takes from her stage show, Everything is Literally Terrible All the Time, which mm-hmm. is the best name of show of all
you
time.
You like that?
Love it. Great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Can you read the last... I want to give people an idea of
all
your
right.
blog. So the last... Just a real quick snippet.
You want me to read these first two paragraphs?
Yeah, just read it and give you an idea. This is from
okay.
the blog.
I had to peruse it really quick to make sure there's no swear words, which shockingly there are not in the first two paragraphs, so it's good that I'm stopping there.
Good,
okay,
right.
This is what it says. Society lied to me about the bloodbath involved in pulling a person out of another person. First of all, they use frothy emotional phrases like giving birth, which sounds more like you're merely handing something over as opposed to being sawed open and having an alien removed. But I persevered, and now I'm responsible for keeping a person alive. There was no downtime between horrific surgery and parenting. A weekend would have been nice. Regardless, I have a child now and she's doing just fine. I, however, continue to suffer physical symptoms I didn't even know existed, proving once again that pregnancy is a hideous process and not the pink bonnet party bus it's often described as. Those symptoms don't end after delivery slash womb opening. Ladies, run for your lives.
Run for your lives.
Just don't do it. Or do it and know that it's going to be terrible.
Well, I mean, okay.
Or do it and say that you liked it when and then you, no one will like it.
When you were planning to have a baby.
Yeah.
Were you thinking in your head, what was your thought?
This is what happened.
Okay.
I'm 36. Mm-hmm. Well, I was 35. And I am in a book club. And I got married. And then people just inevitably start asking you about children, which I think is rude. How about talk about my wedding? It was fun. You want to talk about that for a second? No. Like, at my reception at my wedding, people were like, when are you having a baby? Like, what is happening?
The third song in.
I'm like, is this a joke? I just got married. So I said in my book club, I had that sort of canned pitch. I said, I'm going to be married for a year and then I'm going to have a baby. Felt reasonable. Mm-hmm. And they all told me that that was not a possibility. They're like, you're 35.
You need to do it now?
Life is over. You don't have any time. Code red, 911, all hands on deck. So I thought, this is just a book club. These aren't medical professionals. And so I went to my gynecologist and told her my plan. I'm going to be married for a year and then have a baby. And she was like, code red, 911, we're all going to die. This isn't okay. So when I left that appointment, she's like, I want you to come back here in a month. I had to meet with a preconception counselor. I want you to put this app on your phone and start tracking your ovulation. I'm going to be honest. I continue to not understand what ovulation is. Like, I have no idea what that is, but apparently there's an app for it. So then I'm downloading this app. I'm panicked. I go home to my husband. I'm like, I'm infertile. Like, this is not going to work. This is terrible. Like, this is not.
Before anything.
Yeah, just because I had the preconception counseling, she seemed very upset. Like, she seemed like this isn't possible.
The preconception counseling.
Yeah. So I was, she was like, yeah, without any attempt, I haven't even tried to get pregnant yet. She signed me up for preconception counseling. Like, she's every reason to believe this is not going to work out for me. This is a medical professional.
Right.
So I went home, talked to husband, told him that it was bad, had sex, was pregnant, did not even make it to the preconception counseling. So quite frankly, I think I was duped by my book club.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
They kind of tricked you into this.
They tricked me into it. That's what happened.
Otherwise, you'd be like every other married couple and just forget about the sex and just go right to...
Are you able to not have sex and get pregnant? Oh, I guess
no,
you are.
No, you just skip. You'd do a year and then you would then, you know, of no sex and then get the one sex.
On your anniversary.
Right, on your anniversary.
Right. That's what I should... That's what my goal was.
I mean, I've known you for a while and I know you've done improvisation. And,
yeah.
And... Talk about the transition of being a blogger to be able to write your story the way you do, because it's pretty personal.
Yeah, it's pretty personal.
I mean, obviously, but that's where the humor comes from and the shock a little bit. But there's a lot about you I know, and I don't know you that well.
A lot of people know about different parts. I can't even talk about the things that have happened to me because I'm not sure if it's a swear. Like, I'm just not sure if it's appropriate. Which it probably isn't. Well, improvising is sort of like writing on your feet to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of like making things up on the fly. And then I had this idea that I wanted to do a one-woman show. And I started meeting with someone, a director. And then I started writing all this stuff. And I'm very unorganized. So I'm like, I'll just have a central location for this information, which turned out to be this blog. And then I forgot that I wanted to do a one-woman show and I just kept doing this blog. And then I remembered that I was supposed to be doing this one-woman show. So I did it. And then I started going back to the blog and then I'll probably do another show and then go back to the blog. And so that's what happened. I also just don't, I mean, that wasn't like, I don't have a filter. You know, I told the band that's coming up, they know more about me than most people should know. It's not reasonable. I don't really have
But I mean, you don't have a filter. So you're talking to complete strangers and you tell them your whole
life
story.
That's true. Like the Uber driver that took me here, like I'm like, my skin's really dry. Like, what should I do? It's cold here. Like, I'm willing to take medical advice from my Uber driver. You know, like, I'm just like, let's just all figure it out. It's fine. He said hydrocortisone cream.
That would work.
Yeah. So I'm not wrong. I mean, I got my answer.
Yeah, you did get your answer.
You know?
You're open. What I love about your writing is that you really do take sort of heat, this idea that everything is literally terrible all the time.
It's because it is.
And you apply it to things like your daughter or your marriage or your health or whatever it is. And you know, as we're just talking about, I mean, you're asking an Uber driver for
medical advice.
That could go wrong. And yeah. I guess my question is, like, you look through the lens of this, like this sort of everything is terrible all the time. And you do find hilarious results in doing that.
Well, I think I'm just sort of... unfortunately, I'm like a pessimist. I'm cantankerous, cynical. So the reality is...
Have you always been?
Yeah, I think so.
Really? Like even as a kid, you were...
I've always looked at things the wrong way. Like even when I've had... Like there's something in my blog where I talk about how I have body dysmorphism, but in the way that I think I look really good all the time and like nobody else agrees with me. You know what I mean? Like I have... unreasonable high self-esteem sometimes where I'm like, get dressed and I'm like, Royer, you've done it again. You look amazing. And then I go out and people are like, oh yeah, we have like a plus size section over here. I'm like, wait, what? Am I not really skinny? I don't understand what's happening. So it's not necessarily that's always like bad. It's just right. How I'm looking at things are almost never right. And this is coupled with the fact that then just weird things happen to me.
You've had a lot of weird things.
A lot of medical things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I also think, baby comes out of your...
You could say it.
Can I?
You could say medical. You could.
It comes out of your vagina.
There you go.
That's where it comes
good.
From.
Thank
mine
you.
Didn't.
Thank you for keeping it clean.
Okay. I mean, so mine didn't come out of my vagina. She was ripped from my loins or my abdomen. I don't know.
Which is, yeah, C-section.
It's just, I had a C-section.
Sure.
I had a scheduled C-section, and I had to have a scheduled C-section, obviously because my whole spine is fusing together. But that's like a different story. But that's like a lot of like women don't like to talk about that, you know, because they want. I know I thought that was a pretty good deal because I didn't have to. Really, it seems like they just kind of give you drugs, you take a nap, and then there's a baby there, which is I thought sounded great. But then I had a lot of issues afterwards. Can I tell what the issues are?
You can.
Well, what
just keep it clear. You can. Yes, this is a open, honest show.
Okay.
You just can't swear.
Okay.
So you find a way to tell your story.
Okay. I'm trying.
Which
really
I know
hard.
Is tough for you.
It's not easy.
No.
My kid's gonna be in big trouble because right now she's really little, so she doesn't. You know,
yeah.
I still listen to rap music in the car. She doesn't know.
I don't know.
What does
I
she
know? Right.
But I don't know. I mean, who's to say what her first word is gonna be? I don't know.
Depends on the wrap.
So I had this C-section because I thought, great, you know, just a little ab stitch. Everything will be great. And then I went to the doctor and I was like, I think I might have chlamydia. No big deal. Something's gone wrong. And my doctor, of course, I live in Los Angeles. She knows about my blog. She thinks it's great. She's hooked me up with a lactation consultant who's also a comedy writer. I mean, it's obscene what goes on there. It's not reasonable. So she.
Why did you think you had chlamydia? I mean,
well, there was something was wrong.
Yeah, okay.
It was painful.
I get that it's painful.
I don't know. I just figured this must be an STD. This is something's terrible.
Right, right.
So my gynecologist looked at my vagina. I mean, yeah, I don't know. You've never been to a gynecologist. But they put you in the stirrups.
Yeah.
You've seen it on television. It's not a great position to be in.
Right.
You know, with a strain. You know.
Yeah.
So she, I can't see her face, but I can hear her laughing. So now that she's just laughing at my vagina. So I'm not feeling great, you know? And she says, oh, Allison, I just don't know how you do it. I'm so excited you're really going to have something to write about in your blog. I'm like, this is not okay.
Yeah, you're like, what is going on?
So it turns out I have something called atrophic vaginitis.
Okay.
Which is as it sounds. It's when your vagina
atrophies.
It just shuts down. So this is commonly found in postmenopausal women.
Okay. Which would not be you.
That would not be me. I'm 36.
Right.
I mean, I get it. I had a geriatric pregnancy.
And I remember the blog, but I mean, this has something to do with C-sections.
No, it had to do with the fact that I'm breastfeeding. And so all of the things that like make milk come into your breasts, which is also disgusting, but you're like, you know, you're supposed to do it. They encourage you to do this. But does anybody think that's weird? I mean, that's weird, right?
It's a miracle of life.
Like, I feed my child with milk that comes out of my breasts.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a thing we're supposed to be doing and just pretending is reasonable, which it is not. It's weird.
So you got the diagnosis, and yeah. Again, another thing that can only happen to Allison.
Yeah, right? So now I'm like shooting, what do I have to do? What is it called? Estrogen cream into my vagina. That's like how great. I spend my weekends.
Thank you for that.
Shooting.
Right, thank you.
Welcome. It's not my fault. Like, I feel like I swore.
You didn't. No,
I didn't?
You were okay. Descriptive.
Okay. But you didn't. I mean, that's what's happening. It's not my fault that that's what's happening to me.
It's not. But, I mean, I think you're getting an idea of your writing style that, I mean, there are a lot of points where, you know, it's stuff that people don't talk about, but you're like, listen, this is happening. It's weird.
We need to talk
about
it.
Yeah, right. There are some things that we never talk about, like, you know, breastfeeding.
Well, I don't think it's reasonable. Like, listen, perfect daughter. She's perfect. She's great. Awesome, perfect daughter. Husband, great dude. Super great, reasonable person. He really got the short end of the stick, if we're going to be honest. I mean, he made a mistake. I think we can all agree. But I think sometimes marriage, kids, it's not all, I mean, who do people think? Nobody thinks that it's all good, right?
No.
So let's, I mean, it's not bad.
But there's a lot of stuff that's still behind closed doors. I'm interested because as an improviser and as a performer and a comedian, you've put a lot of stuff on stage. You've learned through your craft to be able to share personal stuff and be okay with it.
Yeah.
With a light shining in your eyes, right?
Yeah.
When, you know, you come, I mean, you're back in town for the holidays. You're with your family. You're back in Frankfurt, I assume, or where you're from. I mean, it's different than a performance in the way that it's on stage and it's a visceral kind of one-time thing and 50 people, 100 people, 150 people saw it.
Yeah.
This is writing that's online and it's popular in the way that people are consuming it. And like you said, people are from your childhood even reading. Oh, yeah. Your gynecologist is reading it.
Yeah.
I mean, does that change it at all? Like the idea that you sort of are almost bearing your personal, your soul that in a place, an archive that can be read over and over and over.
Well, most of the time it's just about, well, it's an interesting question, right? Because like, I think my best bet is just to never teach my child to read. That's number one. That's not a skill she's going to have.
Right.
And then a lot of it, too, is just like, you know, I mean, because, you know, I talk about my drinking and stuff like that. But like, that's old news. That's snoozy. You know, who cares? My husband, he's, oh, look, you can wave at people out the window. That's
you
the
can
best
wave
thing
at people out the window.
Sorry.
Right.
Okay. Now it's getting creepy. you know, my husband is he was my boyfriend from when I was 18. So half the stuff he's lived through.
Okay.
You know, like when I met him, I actually had a DUI and a broken leg. So this isn't like new information. He was there.
He saw through that.
Yeah, this isn't like anything he doesn't know about. You know, he was.
Does
like,
he ever push back and be like, oh, man,
you know, there's
talk
certain things
that
come up that I'll say like, hey, I'm gonna like hashtag divorce on Facebook. Is that okay? I don't really want to divorce you, but I do. I have this really funny joke about divorce. Does that work for you? And he just rolls his eyes. Half the time he doesn't listen to me, which is great. He has like a weird skill where he 70% of what I say, he's not listening.
That's called guy.
He probably did not realize I went off birth control and he is just as shocked that we have a kid as I am. Because I probably mentioned it like in passing, he wasn't paying attention. And yeah, he has like a sixth sense where he doesn't like hear things I say.
Comedian Allison Royer in studio, grew up here in the Chicago area in Frankfurt, went to Lincoln Way High School. She lives in Los Angeles now, does shows out there, but lately she's been writing a blog, which is This Is Going to Work, One Woman's Relentless Search for Something That Fixes Everything. Yeah. What's the URL?
thisisgoingtowork.blogspot.com.
But this is, I mean, you have perfected the idea of the pessimistic approach to personal life, right? That's, I mean, everything is literally terrible all the time.
It is,
but you've been crafting this show. I mean, it almost is performance art in the way that it's never ending. But the question I have is like, do you, your viewpoint like on life, could you ever be optimistic? Because there's so much gold in you being pessimistic. That's your whole,
yeah, it
your
is
whole thing,
weird,
is
right?
That.
Like it's harder for me to write sometimes. Like my vagina atrophies, say. And I'm like, a little relieved. I'm like, that'll be easy to write. It's not going to be a big deal. And then other days, you're like surrounded by people that love you and it's just like really bogging you down. And so you got to find a way to make that bad news. You just got to push through it.
That's my point. Like, I mean, are you seeing when you're happy and things are going well, you're like, oh, this is not interesting. I
because
can't write
you know
about
what'll
this.
Happen in those moments? Like, for instance, I just locked myself in the bathroom out there. That was an accident.
You did out here.
I did. You know, I didn't mean to. And then I got in there and there wasn't toilet paper. And so then I had to sort of like shuffle and then I dropped the key. And then, you know, like my I'm still wearing maternity pant. Like things are wrong. You know, like there's always going to be something that's confusing. I did something this morning called exercise. Terrible idea. And I just wasn't doing well. You know, like, so that's like a good, right? You're like, oh, your exercise is great. But like,
but you found
everybody
a way to...
there knew what they were doing. I did not. And then I had like a runny nose afterwards.
You found the misery in it.
Well, it just, it wasn't working. I wasn't doing it right. I know that I wasn't. Or maybe, you know, people are serious in exercise class. Yeah. Like, you've ever been like, you know, to like a spin class or yoga? Like, nobody, those people are not joking around.
Right.
But if you've never been before, I mean, I think I instead of pretending like I know what I'm doing, I'm just like, this is stupid.
I will say, when I go to the gym, I find myself coming up with what I'm going to say when someone calls me out for not doing it right.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I have all that in my head. So like when someone comes over and goes, you're really not pushing yourself, bro. I could be like, oh, well, yeah, I'm actually here for a trick knee.
Yeah.
Like this is actually doctor prescribed. Right. So I really can't go that fast.
Yeah. We had
I can't
to fill
run.
Something
I gotta
out
walk.
That said, like, what are your goals? And it was like weight loss, health. Like, I love that, like, maybe you wouldn't circle one. You're like, oh, no, I'm not interested in weight loss.
This is like a flyer before
you sign
up?
Like, I had
up
to fill out a form, you know? And then it says, like, how interested are you on a scale of 1 to 10 in achieving these goals? And I put, like, a 1. I'm like, I'm just not that interested because that way maybe they'll back off a little bit. You know, like, what do you mean how interested I am? I'm here at this
terrible class.
Yeah, if you put 10,
you put 10, there's going to be like,
minutes.
If you put 10, there'll be 16 like trainers ready.
Yeah, no.
Like one, they're like, she doesn't care.
I'm like, I'm not interested, actually.
That's smart.
I'm here on accident. Right?
I love it.
Do
it's
you?
Great to see you.
It's good to see you.
It's been a long time, and I love your writing, and I am thankful that you're back in town. You're
it's
only
good.
Back till the holidays, though. Then you go back.
Only till I'm here for a month. I go back January 4th.
Look at you. What are you, college?
I'm on maternity leave.
Oh, you're on maternity.
What do I care? I'll go where I want. Maybe I'll be in Chicago for a month. Maybe I'll be in LA. Who's to say? That's a great thing about having a baby, actually. Maternity leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it only lasts 3 months.
Mine lasted 6 months.
And then it's over. Then you have to adjust. I hate to. That's the next chapter of the vlog.
But you know what? I feel like my whole life, you know, I'm from like a kind of a small town. I know a lot of stay-at-home moms. And over the years, are like, it's tough, man. I wish I could be at my day job. This is hard work.
Yeah, it is hard.
And there was just a part of me that's like, I don't know. And now 6 months, I'm like, full-time mom, here I come. This is good. I'm into it. I watch all RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm watching Project Runway. I'm into it.
You got it figured out.
Oh, yeah. I'm loving it. It's a good deal.
Comedian Allison Royer, her blog is This Is Going to Work, One Woman's Relentless Search for Something That Fixes Everything. It's all taken from her stage show. Everything is literally terrible all the time.
Yeah.
It's great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's gorge in here.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time for Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music in Chicago, performing in our All-State Showcase studio here on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Tonight, we get in the holiday spirit with the band The Bangers. The Bangers are a super group of great Chicago musicians. The 8-piece, as it is tonight in studio, is performing at the Hideout on the 23rd with Christmas with The Bangers. Tonight, they play some of their favorite holiday classics to get us all in spirit. As it says on the website, it's not just a show, it's a party. So
that's right.
That's sort of it. All right, let me introduce everybody who's in studio right now. Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun. Braun, is that right?
Okay,
that's right. I left the N off here, so I was like, it's not Katie Brow. There we go. Carolyn Lahosky, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten. And on the table, Amelia Bazell, Carrie Szymanski, and Kate Walsh. Thanks for being here. We're going to hear some music today.
Thanks for having us.
How does a band like this come together? I mean, obviously you guys have do more than just Christmas music.
We try to, yeah.
Yeah, so we all have played together in various bands for a couple, I don't know, 3-4 years now. And so we basically, whenever a show comes up, we decide on the repertoire. We all do our kind of our own separate charts and parts, put them all together. And then we go from there.
this is something you guys have been doing for a couple of years now. Talk about what kind of song, what kind of Christmas or holiday song you're attracted to.
Well, last year we started by doing the Phil Spector Christmas album because
it's
thing. So up our alley. Save the Silent Night at the end, the creepy monologue. We did,
our own
creepy monologue. Yeah. And this year we're doing some of the same stuff, and then we're also adding a couple other like 60s hits, Christmas hits, and then some other modern stuff too. So we're mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to do some Sharon Jones tunes just in tribute to her because she was such an amazing musician. Yeah.
Yeah, we miss her.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot of the spirit of what you guys do and we see through the Christmas songs, but also what you've done, I've seen different iterations, the girl group Chicago, and as really sort of the celebration of almost like a 60s style music. I mean, talk about getting together, putting all the musicians together with girl group Chicago and this project and why that music speaks to you.
Sure. Yeah, I think it started as sort of just honoring the women and the folks who really brought that music to bear in the 60s. And also, I'm just a big soul music fan in general, and I think we all are to a large extent. Mm-hmm. But I think there's something really special about being a group of women and playing in homage to these people who worked, you know, so hard and put together this amazing music that still rings so true today.
Yeah, there's a timeless quality to it for sure, and I think, like Kate said, we're all really big fans of this style of music, and a lot of the things they're talking about are still just as true today, unfortunately, as they were then. So a lot of the same politics ring true, and a lot of the same, just everything rings true. So, yeah.
And even on a musical level, I feel like every section of the band has so much to do in a way they don't necessarily hear in a lot of, you know, modern music. Like,
yeah,
everyone
right.
has a very intense job.
Well, it's also interesting, too, when you think about the kind of music that you're performing, and we'll hear it in just after the break here, but really, I mean, you don't hear too much holiday music that surrounds the trumpet, the saxophone, the sort of soul 60s, but that's such like the sort of, like, I'm trying to think of that... that sound, it's almost like what Mariah Carey did on the record with All I Want for Christmas, but whatever it was before that, sort of that interpretation of holiday music.
Mm-hmm.
What draws you to that? I mean, I feel like that's such a big part of the Christmas tradition, but it's not, I mean, you could easily do a band with three people doing Silent Night, right?
That's true, yeah, but you wouldn't have that, like, banging horn section, so, I mean, hello. Yeah, I don't know. It makes you dance. Like, it's timeless. It, like, you can play this music anywhere in the world, I would dare say, and people would tap their toes. You know, there's just something really fun, and it's a rhythm that's kind of universal. And yeah,
I think one other thing too is that especially like the Phil Spector recordings, those were all done in the recording studio and not really like played out live that much. So it's like kind of different experience to have to hear it live as opposed to like on this recording with the actual wall of sound.
Yeah.
Thing, so,
well, there's nothing that says Christmas like a saxophone.
Yeah, well,
it really does.
True.
It's right there. In studio, the Bangers, they got a show coming up at the Hideout on the 23rd called Christmas with the Bangers. Weeping Willows is going to be the opening act. They're a Patsy Cline cover band, tribute band. Okay, so we'll take a quick break and then we're going to hear the Bangers live in Studio 435 here on The Download. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music in Chicago, performing in our Allstate Showcase studio here on beautiful Michigan Avenue. Tonight, we get in the holiday spirit with the band The Bangers. They're going to be at the Hideout on the 23rd. With Christmas with the Bangers, they are Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun, Carolyn Lohoski, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten, and they are ready to jam out some Christmas faves. Here they are with the track Warm This Winter. Take it away.
We met at a ski lodge, and we fell in love. Right by a fireplace, we shared our first embrace, and then inside my heart, I felt a fire start. It's gonna yours to have and to hold. And I'm gonna be warm this winter. Ice skating on a frozen lake. Sleigh riding down a mountainside. Roasting popcorn. Dancing till the dawn. That's how I knew love was a bone.
Bangers live in studio 435 here on 720 WGN. They're playing at the Hideout on the 23rd December with Christmas with the Bangers. Like they say on the website, it's not just a show, it's a party. Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Brong, Carolyn Lohosky, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten in studio. That was the track Warm This Winter. We got another one, right? What's this one going to be? White Christmas. All right, let's keep it going here. It's Christmas time on the Download Studio 435. Here is White Christmas by the Bangers.
Thank you.
The Bangers live in Studio 435, rocking out some Christmas spirit. Holiday classics here on Studio 435. They're going to be at the Hideout on the 23rd of December with Christmas with the Bangers. It's not just a show, it's a party. Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun, Carolyn Lahoski, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten in studio tonight. We'll take a break here. We'll get the update on tonight's news, and we'll hear some more Christmas music. Right? That's good. Great is that right here. The guys outside like it too. All right. It's a download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Studio 435 time, our weekly showcase of the best live music in Chicago. All in our All-State Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. Tonight, the Bangers, a super group of great Chicago musicians. The eight-piece now in studio. I mean, how many do you usually have when you're on stage, like at the height on the 23rd? How many piece will
we'll
the
have,
Bangers be?
Like 12 to 15. We've had up to 18 or 20, yeah. I think. And there's a whole host of people all over Chicago who are occasional Bangers. Probably upwards of 20.
Yeah, my good buddy Jill. Jill's in the show, too. Yeah.
Jill Hopkins.
Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun, Caroline Lahoski, Kate Walsh, Stephanie Whiten in studio tonight. They are the Bangers. They will be at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia, on the 23rd with Christmas with the Bangers, which is not just a show, it's a party. Christmas music. Let me ask you, as musicians, you play all sorts of stuff. Is there any sort of, I mean, because it's music that's so known for sing-alongs and playing or jam sessions. And is there a particular style or like skill set to it? Or is it pretty standard, these songs, when it comes to the musicianship of a Christmas song?
These are the hardest songs we play all year.
Really?
At least for me. I don't know. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of complicated chord changes and a lot of like 60s pop music was three chords, and these are based on earlier music that was more like jazzy in style, you've got just a little bit more going on. So even like something as simple as White Christmas, I have to like really pay attention sometimes. Yeah,
that's interesting. I mean, because I guess you're right. I mean, a lot of these songs are kind of born out of jazz, and I would assume that they're a little bit more complicated in the way that they're structured.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, just the fact that we're doing the Phil Spector arrangements, it makes it a little bit more like orchestral in that way. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's more kind of extra, like, and a ninth or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like more going on.
But on that same token, it also makes it more fun. So it's not the sort of like gather around the piano music that maybe, you know, your family does or something.
Right, we're better than your family.
We're better than your family. But yeah, it is sort of like, you know, it's a party, like you said. So that's our goal. It's like, it's not wholesome necessarily. Like, we're going to be drunk. Bring us your beer bellies and your, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's
fun.
A party.
Yeah.
We're there to have fun.
Well, I'm interested only, you know, when you think about this kind of music, it does sort of have this way of sort of having a party effect. I mean, the music that you're playing. What attracts you? We kind of talked about at the top about the 60s music, but the Phil Spector stuff. What makes that record not just kitschy, but special in the way that he's creating music that is much different, but it's still sort of Christmas standards?
I mean, the sheer density, I think, of it. Like, the wall of sound is no joke. It surrounds us all with its beauty.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, it's dense, and it's, like I said, it's fun, you know? So it, plus there's some songs like Marshmallow World that we just did, like that's, or that we're about to do, rather.
Yeah.
I blacked out, I guess.
In the future.
There's some songs on there that aren't necessarily, like
the standard,
everyday.
Yeah. How important is that for you guys to try and pick songs that people don't know? I mean, because you think they come out for Christmas with the Bangers, and I want to hear all the rocking around the Christmas tree type stuff. But, I mean, do you guys sort of pride yourself on finding stuff that's sort of the B-sides of Christmas songs?
I think we find ourselves, we want to take a balance between, you know, playing the Bangers, you know, playing the hits, and then playing other stuff that people may not have heard, but I feel like Marshmallow World has become a favorite of a lot of folks since we've we've played it and in this band too. You know,
we're really talking up Marshmallow
we
World.
We really are.
This is the most anyone's ever talked about Marshmallow World. Yeah.
Marshmallow World.
Marshmallow.
Sorry.
Yeah,
that's
right now.
Marshmallow
World. Are you always as, I mean, as musicians, this one thing, but just as kids, are you into Christmas music? Because there's some that will say, you know, all right, enough of this. Like, I might be one of those who are like, at a certain point, you're like, all right, enough of the light FM and playing Christmas music. Does Christmas music get a bad name or bad rap?
I mean, I don't necessarily, I don't know. This Christmas music is fun. I don't think any of us would play this show year round. Yeah. But it's really fun, you know, for when we do it. And
yeah, I wouldn't say I'm like a Christmas music fan.
Yeah.
Know? But and
there are some that are.
Right.
Pete Zimmerman is a, he's sort of a Christmas, he's our Christmas go-to. And I would assume he would probably say that he loves Christmas music.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, there's so many different types, you know. Like, are you talking about the first Noel? Or are you talking about, like, it's very different, you know?
That's a good transition to my last question here, which is there a Christmas song that you will not play? Like, as the Bangers, where you're like, oh, you all together, you're like, nah, man, we can't do that one.
Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yeah.
100%. I'm not playing that song. Forget it.
Yeah. Let's have Consent in our Christmas.
Yeah, I'll play that Consent version.
We thought about doing a Consent version where it just starts and she's like, I really can't stay. I got to go away. And he's like, no problem.
No problem.
See
you later.
This is
okay,
fine.
Bye.
Yep. Yeah.
Let me get you an Uber.
Yeah.
Sure. All right.
There you go.
That's a new song. Let me get you an Uber.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll take a quick break here. The Bangers are in studio. They're going to be at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia on December 23rd. With Christmas with the Bangers. They will be back here in studio right after the break, and we will play two live songs. We're going to hear Marshmallow. What is it, Marshmallow?
Marshmallow World.
Marshmallow World, and what's the second one we're going to hear?
Christmas Baby, Please Come Home.
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, yeah, that's a classic. Yeah. All right, stand by. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back here in Studio 435. Stay with us. Oh, yeah, that's my jam. 720 WGN. It is Studio 435, our weekly showcase of the best live music in Chicago in our Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Tonight, we get in the holiday spirit with the band The Bangers. They are a super group of great Chicago musicians. They're performing at the Hideout on the 23rd with Christmas with The Bangers. Not just a show, it's a party. They are live right now, ready to give us some more holiday goodness. Here is the track, which is off the Phil Spector record that we were just talking about, called Marshmallow World. The Bangers in studio. Take it away.
Cloud getting friendly in
you go. Good use of the glockenspiel there. The Bangers in Studio 435 here on 720 WGN. They are performing at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia on the 23rd. Christmas with the Bangers is not just a show, it's a Christmas party. Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun, Caroline Lahoski, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten in studio. They got one more in, and what are we going to hear again?
Christmas Baby, Please Come Home.
Christmas Baby, Please Come Home, here live at Studio 435. Take it away. Bangers live in Studio 435 here on the download. They are going to be at the Hideout on the 23rd. It's Christmas with the Bangers, playing all these jams. Claire Keating, Amelia Bazell, Stephanie Rohr, Carrie Szymanski, Katie Braun, Caroline Lahoski, Kate Walsh, and Stephanie Whiten in studio. There will be others at the event. The event is it has the Weeping Willows, which is the Patsy Cline cover band or tribute band, which will be opening up. And this is on the 23rd. I can't thank you guys enough for coming in studio and performing here in Studio 435. You were great. Thank you. That's going to do it for the download tonight. That was awesome. It was so much fun having the Bangers in studio. Coming up, we will be here tomorrow night just for an hour. The Blackhawks play early on the East Coast playing the Rangers. So we will be here from 10 to 11 tomorrow night, and we're just going to play the worst, which is fun. So we'll do that. And then on Wednesday, I think there's a Northwestern basketball game that's early, so we don't start till 8, probably a little later. But we'll do a full show from 8 to 11. And I think the schedule's so goofed up this week. Then again, because they're on a road trip, the Blackhawks are early again on Thursday. So we come on again just for 10 to 11. And we'll have Greg here. We'll do swap meet. And then on Friday, it's full show. Well, there you go, full show. We'll take it. Amy Guth in for Patty Vasquez tonight. Good to see you, Amy. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. That was, I'm in festive spirits after the band, right?
I just walked in here and got like hit in the face with festiveness.
There's a lot
of
festiveness.
There's so much festive happening and it's all color coordinated and it's so festive and sparkly in here. There's a lot happening.
You know, that's what we try to do. You know, it's not just the soundtrack and bringing the bands in, but they have to be color coordinated and festive as well.
They were, yeah. That was the thing that was happening. That was definitely a thing. And you guys had your little Christmas portrait by the tree. That was really
cute. That's really nice.
It's
going to be our Christmas card, the Bangers and Justin.
Yes.
Right. I'm the MASH. That works out. What do you got on the show tonight?
Oh, my gosh. So many things. You know, normally the show that I do on Saturdays, I just pick one topic and talk about it all night.
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of like I kind of go nuts when I'm filling in for Patty because I all the things. Right. So we are going to we're definitely going to be talking about there's a lot of conversation around bicyclists right now as ever. But that
today
conversation has kicked up again. So we're going to be talking about that. And also we're going to talk with a spokesperson from Metra about some things. We're going to talk to Rex Hupke, of course, our good friend.
Love Rex
Hupke. Super funny.
Metra is interesting because they're going to jack up their fares in 2017. Just give me a little detail.
Yes.
And then on the one before that, the bicyclist, that was Joe Schwederman. Did you know that, Pete? That's Chaddock Institute's Joe Schwederman, who's a longtime guest and friend. That's an interesting study, the idea that why don't we just call it out? Why not? Why are we in a position where we're trying to get bicyclists to stop at stop signs? They're saying, you know, why not have a rolling kind of almost use it like a yield sign?
The Idaho stop.
The Idaho stop.
I always call it the California roll myself.
That's actually better than the Idaho stop. California roll is great. You can do so many sushi references.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of
things.
But
I think the California roll is specific to driving in a car.
Yeah.
So you just kind of
slide
get up
through
to the stop sign like, nah, nobody's here. I'm going to keep going.
Well, I think it's an interesting take. I mean, the idea that that's how it goes. Any driver in Chicago right now would say the same. I mean, it's more confusing that we're, as a driver, I'm both a driver and a pedestrian, but when I do drive, it's more confusing when bikers are supposed to follow the same rules you are, and you're not, when they're not, it's, I just get confused. But I get easily confused. I'm an easily confused guy.
See, I find it most confusing when it's like, you know, a lot of cities have that little bicycle light.
Yeah.
That one's, I'm like, what are we? Because sometimes cars will just go. They're like, safe for bikes, safe for me. And they'll just go. And you're like, no, because there's going to be with the, oh.
Have you ever been to Amsterdam?
No.
If you go to Amsterdam and check out the bike, tram,
situation there,
car situation there.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with math. I can understand like just how it all plays out. Grids. Like I'm very excited to live in Chicago.
Like that should be on a business card.
Yeah, right.
Justin Goffman, okay at math.
Okay at math. I like that we live on a grid. I know where we're at. It makes sense. In Amsterdam, there is some method to the madness. I couldn't figure it out. I tried. I almost ruined vacation just trying to figure this out. But there's like the amount of bike traffic and the amount of trams on the actual, you know, cobblestone going through and cars. It's amazing. There's not mass casualties at all times, but they have it all figured out and they're following the rules of the road and they understand it. It's usually the tourists that don't get it and walk off the curb and get smacked by a bike or whatever. But there was a book written about, I mean, there's something so magical and almost like ballet, the way they do their, transportation in Amsterdam. You should check. I mean, it's quadruple, five times the amount of traffic that we have in Chicago, bike traffic, and it works. So it's something, there's something there, and I don't know what it was. I mean, the bikers there obviously knew what they were doing, so they're like, they know their stops and what the signals are, things like that.
Well, it's such a big bike culture. I mean, every time somebody I know has been there, the social media feeds of that person, it's just full of bikes.
Yeah.
Bikes and pretty buildings.
The other thing that's great about Amsterdam, too, is you go into some of the back streets, and it looks exactly like New York City, like the Lower East Side.
Oh,
like Soho, where you're like, oh, I guess New Amsterdam. I get it.
Hmm. Oh. I see what you did there.
It takes
with
one second
Amsterdam.
Where you're like, this looks a lot like New York. Did they take this from New York? And then you're like, oh. Like it's the exact same architecture. You're like, oh, I'm dumb. I just figured that out. Like you have that
somewhere
moment.
They
so.
Might be giants or just shaking their heads right now. Like that lyric has been there for years.
All right.
Just
well,
now.
It sounds like you got a great show. Have a great one.
Thanks.